You're listening to Leaders in Payments and Fintech, a podcast brought to you by Edgar Dunn & Company, the global payments and fintech consulting firm. Coming to you from the City of London, I'm your host, Martin Kodrish. And in this series, I'm meeting with leaders and practitioners across the industry to find out what it takes to bridge the gap between strategy and execution. My central question is, how can we commercialize and bring the benefits of ever deeper new technology to market in what continues to be a highly regulated industry? If you enjoy these interviews, please do subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. So enough of the intro, let's get straight into today's episode. This week, we meet up with Sergio Fogel, calling in from Uruguay's capital city, Montevideo. Sergio is co-founder, co-president, and chief strategy officer of dLocal, Uruguay's leading fintech. dLocal provides cross-border payments infrastructure connecting global merchants to customers in emerging markets in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Established in 2016, dLocal has become Uruguay's first fintech unicorn and the second Uruguayan company to list on Wall Street, which it did in June 21. In our conversation, we discuss dLocal's startup journey, and Sergio explains how dLocal continues to grow and impact the lives of many in the emerging markets it connects. He also shares his view on the current market and a lot more besides, so I do hope you enjoy this episode with Sergio Fogel from dLocal. Okay, Sergio, so how are you today?
Doing great. In the end of the summer here down in Uruguay.
Well, it's great to have you on our podcast this week. So for the benefit of the audience, you are Sergio Fogel from the powerhouse that is dLocal, based in Uruguay. So really, really excited to hear all about the journey and your view on the current market.
Thank you. Hearing our name together with the word powerhouse, we are slowly getting used to it. It's the first time I hear that adjective given to us, but yes, I guess we're no longer a startup.
Well, maybe we can cover off the startup journey in our conversation. But yes, I mean, I think you know you're successful, listed on NASDAQ now, and you know you are in terms of cross border payments infrastructure, you are definitely leading for the markets that I believe that you're supporting. So I think it's in that context fair to refer to you as a leader and a powerhouse. So maybe just to kick off the conversation, you can just provide a short introduction to yourself, and then you know, maybe we can then talk about introducing dLocal.
Sure. Well, as I said, my name is Sergio. I was born and raised in Uruguay. I'm a computer scientist by training. I've had a stint in the corporate life, first in R&D, working for IBM for a few years, in very arcane stuff like chip design and stuff like that. Then I moved to the commercial field, again, always in technology. And I became an entrepreneur back in the year 2000. First with a B2B e-commerce site that was not pretty successful. Then I was in voice over IP, so I had quite a long entrepreneurial track record. I founded, depends on how you count, but it's around 7 or 8 companies. Yeah, and we founded the dLocal back in 2016. A bit of it based on our experience as users of payment methods and experiencing firsthand the frustrations of accepting payments in emerging markets and seeing how much behind the payment schemes were in emerging markets when compared to the US or Europe. Mm-hmm. And more especially so in when the transactions are cross-border, meaning that the site or the company that is receiving the payment is in a different country from where the end user or the consumer is.
Perfect. So yeah, we wanted to kind of cover off 3 or 4 topics, including the cross-border payment hurdles that you're looking to solve, your dLocal's approach to cross-border payments, and also the impact that cross-border payments are sort of having on emerging markets. So I think that's really important, really interesting to hear. And then obviously, you know, in between, love to hear more about the dLocal kind of growth story and what's next. So maybe just to kick off, to provide a bit more further context, maybe you can just describe, you know, a typical dLocal customer and how they use the platform.
Sure. Our customers, we need to distinguish here from between what you call a customer, which is normally an internet company which sells mostly to consumers or to businesses. So our customers are the biggest internet companies in the world. I think out of the top 10, we have vast majority of them. Not all of them allow us to publish the names, but all the big names are there. So when a company wants to accept a payment from a consumer in an emerging market, normally when the company starts a journey of expanding internationally, so normally the first step is to start accepting payments with the traditional credit card schemes. Maybe they will add a few wallets like typically PayPal. But then the issue is that most consumers in emerging markets will not be able to pay. Mm-hmm. And the reason they will not be able to pay is that they either do not have a Visa or MasterCard card. They may have, for instance, a debit card, or they may have a credit card with a different brand. I don't know, if you're talking about Nigeria, for instance, the most popular card is called Verve. Or they may not have a credit card at all. It doesn't mean that they don't pay online. They do pay online. The e-commerce is growing very, very fast in all this part of the world. But simply the payment schemes that they use are different. So if you go to Brazil today, everybody is paying for everything with this thing called Pix, which is an amazingly successful story. You go to India, then UPI is very popular. You go to Mexico, and in Mexico, people like to pay using a cash method called Oxxo. You go to Africa, mobile money is very popular. The thing is that all those payment schemes, first of all, each one of them has a different API, different way of integrating, different logics in terms of the payments. And the other problem that they have is that if you want to sign up to accept a Pix payment, let's say, they will ask you to have a Brazilian tax ID and a Brazilian entity and a Brazilian bank account. And in most cases, or many cases, companies do not want to have a presence in each one of the emerging markets in the world, because that means having a local team and having a law firm and an auditor and complying with local tax regulations and so on. So that's why they want to continue working cross border. So what we provide is we give the best of both worlds. We allow you to continue working cross-border, but accept all the myriad of local payment methods. Today, we support over 900 different payment methods. And all of that through just what we call the one dLocal concept, which means you only need to sign one agreement. Your finance team only needs to onboard one payment set provider. You only have one technical integration, and you only have one reporting and reconciliation process to follow, and settlement, etc. So essentially what we do, we like to say that we unlock the power of emerging markets for our merchants.
Right. And so what the flows are typically from a developed market, collecting money from developed customers in developing markets. Is that?
We actually have two flows. Yeah. That's our initial flow is what you just mentioned, which is consumers in emerging markets paying to internet companies in mostly in developed countries. Mm-hmm. And that can be for streaming services, ride sharing. It can be for cloud services. It can be for games. But we also have the opposite flow. That's where essentially it's the gig economy. So you have a remote worker in India who needs to accept the payments for essentially his salary, or you have a rideshare driver in Costa Rica who needs to accept the payments for the rides that he just drove. Or web designer, you name it. We have lots of different use cases. So we have both flows, cross-border from emerging markets and cross-border to emerging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always the consumer in the emerging market. We do not foresee us providing private services in Europe or in the US. That premise has been solved.
And which markets do you cover?
Today we cover it's a bit over 40 different countries. Mm. That's essentially almost all of Latin America. We are growing very fast in Africa, and then we have the Middle East and South and Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So it's 40 countries overall. The largest ones are essentially the ones that I mentioned: Brazil, Mexico, Chile, Colombia, Argentina, Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt, Morocco, India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Saudi, all the largest economies, which is super exciting because those are countries that with population that is growing very fast and more affluent.
Yeah, I mean, some previous conversations I've had, you know, the payments can be quite a transformational driver for some of these developing markets as a sort of base layer in infrastructure. Maybe we can just talk briefly about the impact of payments on these emerging economies. Well, what some of the observations you've made, and you know, how is dLocal transforming the lives in those markets?
Yeah, we're actually, right now we are starting a study with economics professors to try to quantify that. But we have quite a lot of anecdotal evidence about the transformation that we are making. So on one side, we have literally millions. Our latest count was that last year, around 150 million people paid through us. Now, out of those, the vast majority never heard the name dLocal. We are completely transparent to our the consumer. Mm-hmm. So they don't know. But the truth is that we are giving people access to lots of services that they didn't have before.
Right.
So a very, very iconic case is a satellite internet access company that started to provide the services across Africa. And it's super interesting to see when people in some country in Africa say, I don't know, I'm in Mozambique and I'd like to be able to pay with local payment methods the same way as people in Nigeria can. And then we onboard open that country together with the customer, and then suddenly lots of people start to using, and then they gain access to internet in remote part of the country. So those type of stories, that's our mission. That's when we say, okay, we are really making a very, very impactful change. And then you have all kinds of stories, people who engineers in all parts of the world. I'm convinced that talent is not a monopoly of developed markets. You have amazingly talented people across Africa and Asia and Latin America. And now they can get paid, I don't know, let's say through a company like Deel with us, which does payroll.
Mm.
And then they can get paid for their salary. And instead of working for a small salary locally, they can start working for a remote company and getting paid in a safe and compliant way. And then you have everything from, I don't know, streaming, people who want to watch whatever, is it sports or play games or... what I like to say is that most payment companies, if they fail to process a transaction, that transaction will end up happening anyway. Large part of our transactions, if we weren't there, would not happen. So that's economic value that wouldn't be created. So we are very, very happy about it.
So there's not much an alternative that
exactly
can fall back.
Exactly. There are many alternatives. Depends, of course, on the geography. Some are more developed, some are less. In most cases, we go through the local official channels. So, for instance, I received a local payment in Brazilian reais, mm-hmm. and then I converted it to US dollars and they send it abroad. Now, some of the markets are very easy and straightforward. I don't know, let's take the case of in Brazil, the regulation is very clear and it's easy to get access to foreign currency. Some markets are much more challenging and you need to get the special permissions from the government, and the government, the central bank will, before giving you access to hard currency, they will want to see exactly what services or what products that is for, and they will not allow everything. One of the biggest hurdles that we need to go through is actually regulation. We are a license, we have 10 different licenses, and we are in the process of applying for more licenses. It varies a lot according from country to country. So that it's lots of complexity that we hide from our merchants. So if an advertising company wanted to do the same thing, they would need to be a specialist in how regulation works in each country and how it's changing. Many of these countries have capital controls. Many of these countries change the regulation in a heartbeat, and sometimes it's even retroactive. We've all seen what happened in Argentina over the last essentially 1 year, where the government started to tighten up regulation about the foreign exchange, and then suddenly it reversed course. So we handle all that complexity and hide it from the merchant. That's our mission in life.
Yeah, I mean that's similar to a lot of payment companies, right? You know, there's the kind of complexity under the hood that is essentially not visible from the outside, and the user experience is getting ever more simplified and frictionless. And that hidden complexity is being managed by a very sophisticated company. Both in terms of technical, but also, like you say, regulatory complexity, right? That's really interesting to hear.
If you look at our headcount, what we have most is engineers, of course, but the second one, I believe, is still lawyers. We have a big in-house team of lawyers, plus an even bigger team of outside lawyers.
Right, and what about your local operations globally? Where are you present in terms of your team?
Well, we are mostly remote. Our largest office is in Uruguay. That's where we started. We have a large office in Argentina as well. But lately, we've been hiring all over the world. We hired, as I told you, we believe there's amazing talent everywhere.
Sure.
So we managed to hire amazing people in South Africa, in Nigeria, in Spain. Our team is quite young, and they're used to, from day one, to work through Zoom or Google Meet, and they work remotely from different places. We do have offices in some places. In the places where we have more than 10 employees, we have an office, but people they can choose whether to work from the office or remotely, and many prefer to work remotely. Our CTO lives in Berlin. Our head of legal is in London. Is that
a function of COVID, would you say, or have you always been operating like that even prior to COVID?
We were looking into it. Uruguay is a very small country, so at one point we were finding it challenging to get a specialized professionals in Uruguay. And we started hiring in Argentina, and then with COVID happened, it really accelerated it. And we never went back. So, Of course, there are some people that prefer to go to the office, and I was there yesterday, and there was a lot of movement, and I particularly love it. But some other people prefer to work from home or from, a work location or whatever. So, you know, some companies are insisting that people go back to the office. We don't. Yes. We can work.
Sure. So the kind of like, the hybrid policy is becoming firmer, but it's challenging for companies who don't offer a hybrid, I see, when others do, right? Or offer even greater flexibility like you do. Challenging
then to take into account that we were, well, even before COVID, we were quite distributed in one sense. We have what we call country managers. We have teams on the ground in each one of the geographies that we serve. So even before COVID, we had people in Brazil, in Argentina, in Colombia, in Chile, in Mexico, in South Africa, Nigeria, in each one of those countries. And those are the people that they are there. They know the regulators. They work through the financial system. They are the ones that can tell you if your user experience is not ideal in a certain country, or if there's a new payment scheme that's coming up. So we already had a very big team on the operation side.
Right.
So we did have all the culture of working remotely. That helped a lot.
Okay, great. So just on the topic of growth, where do you see your growth coming from? There's a lot of talk about, you know, the consequence of COVID is you know, just the growth of small global businesses almost, right? So, you know, people entering or becoming self-employed and developing small businesses in a way that they, because of the digital nature of what's happened after COVID, Zoom, et cetera, all those things, a remote nature of work now, people are able to assemble a team a lot better, a lot quicker, a lot faster than they ever did before. And, you know, we're seeing this real growth dynamic in that micro small business segment. Are you seeing that trend?
Yeah, but most of our customers today are actually large corporations, not so much a small business. We do have small businesses as well. Back to your question of growth, we have, I would say, four main drivers of growth. The first one is essentially that the population and the markets that we serve are growing. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the US and Europe, that their populations are growing at a small base, or sometimes even shrinking. Mm-hmm. When you go to emerging market, the population is growing. The population is young.
Yeah.
We are still seeing an increase in the number of people connected to the internet. That's something that is no longer happening in the US or Europe. But we see more and more people. I mean, internet penetration is already very high in most places, but sometimes it's in the 60% as opposed to the 90s. So we have more and more population, lots of young people who are very eager to spend money on international products and services, who are urban, who are making much more money than used to be the case. So we have that, which is a secular trend, that's the economy or the number of consumers and available money for consumption is growing. Second driver of growth that we have, of course, is our sales team, which is onboarding more and more customers all the time. We have another factor of growth, which is geographical expansion. Mm-hmm. Large part of the countries that we serve, we added them recently. So we are still ramping up the volumes in those countries. We are working our account management teams, their main role is to work with our existing customers. And sometimes we have a customer that is working with us in just one geography. Mm-hmm. So now we're working with them together to expand into 2, 3, 5, 10. So our largest merchant on average have just 10 geographies out of the 40 that we serve. So that's another big factor of growth. And then, of course, we are launching a new product. That's also part of the...
So give me a flavor of your roadmap, if you can. What are you launching? What are you working on?
The last one that we launched is a marketplace product. Due to regulation, in many of the countries, if you're a marketplace company, you need to have what's called the split payments.
Yep.
Which means that we as a payment provider need to split the payment between the part that belongs to the seller and to the marketplace at the source and settle separately.
Yep.
And the other thing that we needed to customize for platforms and for marketplaces is a massive onboarding of sellers. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, because we serve large companies, we had a manual onboarding process. And then we found that we needed to onboard. We onboarded 200,000 sellers last year. You need automation for that. That's one of the products. We have quite a lot of internal knowledge about the fraud, which we are also selling as a separate product. There's quite a lot. We're, of course, looking very, very deeply at possibilities opened by AI. We're very active.
Marketplace product, is that essentially like a white label for the marketplaces to offer payments, embed payments in their platform?
Also, but it's mostly just for the day-to-day operation. If you're operating a marketplace, which there are quite a lot of them, and many of them are specific to one country or one region, then the whole payment experience is a bit different than in a normal merchant. It's not so much as embedded finance as it is a bread and butter payment, which needs to be quite different from the traditional one.
Okay, great. So Sergio, tell me about, just brief recap on the dLocal story. What do you think were the sort of bumps in the road? What are the key learnings that you took? You've taken away from setting it up and where it's currently at.
Yeah, I mean it's been an amazing ride. The company has been growing very quickly, and of course it's not the same thing to run a company with a few employees like we were initially, as it is running a company with 100 employees or being a public company licensed in 10 different jurisdictions, which, by the way, regulatory requirements are becoming more and more complex.
Yes.
Well, many people say,
there's been a loosening of regulations around the edge, but the actual core of holding funds and managing customer funds have just become more and more tightly regulated.
It's becoming quite challenging. I think that any new entrant that gets into the market today, the hurdle is really, really high, the regulatory hurdle.
Yep.
We need to comply. Sometimes there are even conflicting regulations. For instance, privacy rules in many cases require you to destroy records after a certain amount of time.
Yep.
But sometimes in another geography, you're mandated to keep, because of regulations, you need to keep the record for longer. So we need to comply with safeguarding of customer funds regulation, comply with privacy regulation, comply with that. And now Europe came up with a cyber security regulation. And
DORA? DORA?
Sorry? DORA, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
There's DORA and there's the PSD3, which is coming up.
Yeah.
So, and each one of those regulations, of course, is a cost, and it's people that need to be assigned to that, and consultancies, etc.
Yeah, I was at a conference last week in Berlin, in fact, on open banking. You know, and I was on a panel with N26 and Wise, and we were discussing, you know, how do you manage product innovation in when you're faced with so much regulation, right? In a highly regulated market, what are the challenges and how do you go about managing innovation in our space? I mean, I think that the feedback or the view from both really was that the technology allows you to be incredibly innovative, right? So there's so much innovation that's possible. The technology is you're able to work a lot faster and move a lot quicker and what have you. But that whole build things and break fast mentality doesn't necessarily work in our highly regulated industry, right? So developers that come on board, you know, from outside of the industry with that mentality find it quite a challenge to operate in this, you know, highly regulated market. I mean, how do you go about, you know, keeping the spirit of innovation alive in when faced with so much regulation?
It is a challenge. Most of our innovation today is driven by the requirements of our merchants. Mm-hmm. So it's our merchants that come to us and say, and tell us, we have this problem, we need you to solve it for us. And then we need to work with a different legal and compliance team to make sure that that whatever we do is compliant. And sometimes the compliance is, we have an extra layer of complexity because sometimes one transaction is subject to three different regulations, because if you are sending money from country A to country B through a hub in country C, sometimes you have to comply with the regulations of countries A, B, and C. So the same transaction, sometimes if there's a suspicious transaction, you may have to report it three times according to different criteria. But we like to think of ourselves as a very, very fast, very innovative and creative company. And our people love solving challenges and finding ways around the challenges. In many cases, you need to work together with lawyers.
Right.
But yeah, it's still a challenge. It's a different type of challenge.
Cross-functional teams, I presume you work on that basis organizationally, internally, you know.
Yeah. Compliance is always part of the equation. It's always a part of the relationship with the customer. In many cases, we involve the legal team very early on in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because our customers also want to make sure that we are compliant. We have a tax team, for instance, that they know about tax regulations in each one of the countries. I'm always amazed about how much they know about tax. I find it very boring for them. It's a life and it's critical for our business.
Totally. Yeah. All right. Look, just to wrap up, what's next for dLocal? What are your sort of top of your priority list for this and next year?
Top of our priority list is execution.
Yeah.
What we call company building. We've grown quite a lot. When we went public, I think we were just 300 people, and we are now nearing 1,000. So that requires a lot of different processes in terms of how you hire, in terms of how you manage compliance, how you reconciliate records. We are managing a very, very large amount of transactions. We are doing around 5 million transactions per day. So there are a lot of challenges in how to manage that, what we call managing complexity at scale. Mm-hmm. So I would say that right now our main priority is continue executing heads down and continue serving our customers in the best possible way. We are really fanatical about serving our customers and being near them and solving their problems. And in parallel, my role in the company is the chief strategy officer, but we are looking at what's ahead in the next 3 to 5 years. And we have a few products that we are quite excited about, and we are starting with pilots. But right now, the main focus of the company is execution.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, I concur with that. So what's the best way for the audience to reach out to you, Sergio, if they want to know more about dLocal? And
well, of course, you can reach through the website. They can reach, we can share in the... Yeah. In the notes, we can share an email address they can reach out to through LinkedIn. It should be quite easy to reach us.
You're on LinkedIn at least, yeah?
Yes, aware.
Okay. Sergio, thank you so much for your insights today. It's been a privilege to speak to you on the podcast today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's great. Speak again soon, I hope.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. To hear more interviews, please do subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. It helps and means a lot. Also, I welcome any questions, ideas, or suggestions, so feel free to make contact and say hello. Reach out to me on LinkedIn or at edgardunn.com. You can send me a message there, or you can email me on martin.kodrish@edgardunn.com. I look forward to hearing from you, and I will see you next time.